very dull sometimes, so having some pictures in front of you is an easy way to stay awake, I hope. For starters, it's an actual real delight to be here and just to share a bit with you about how we've been going over the last 3 or 4 years. We came here and visited St. Paul's about 4 years ago, just before we left to go to Cambodia. I'm not sure how many of you were here then. There's some familiar faces, which is lovely to see. I don't know how familiar we are with you. I don't think I have changed much at all. I've got more grey in my beard, I'm pretty sure. The kids are a bit older since last time, hopefully, thankfully. And they are they sitting at the back? Oh, they've gone in the back room. I thought it was incredibly quiet. I thought my kids were well behaved, but no, they've just left the building. So that's why. For those of you who don't know who I am, my name's Neil Dunbar. My lovely wife Rebecca is at the back there. We have been serving over in Cambodia for the last 3.5 years through New Zealand Church Missionary Society. St. Paul's here is one of the wonderful churches who prays for us regularly and supports us. And so we're very thankful that we can come here and share a bit with you today. I thought hopefully technology is going to work well. So I've got my clicker here. We've got some pictures here to help you see things that are going on. If it doesn't work, I'll just talk, but prayerfully it will work. So here's all of us. There's my children there, Jonathan the tall one. He's now 12, Aaron's now 9, and Emily's 6. When we left, Emily was 2, or just turned 3. So for her, she didn't remember anything about New Zealand when we were about to come back. So it's been interesting coming back and sharing and seeing all the different things that we've seen here so far. We've been, let's see, is this going to work? How are we doing? There we go, wonderful. Was that you or me, Hank? That was me? Very good, it's working, praise God. So we've been living in the city of Phnom Penh, Cambodia for the last 3.5 years. This is the city we're in. It's a city of 3 million people in a country of 16 million people. The next biggest city is probably about close to 100,000 people. So this is the main city in Cambodia. It's where most people come to do their education, to earn good money as well. So it's quite becoming a modern city. It's a city known for bikes. Yeah, often it takes a long time to go places because of all the motorbikes in the street. It takes us about an hour to get to church on a Sunday morning just because of the traffic difficulties. So many bikes in the streets, and being a Southeast Asian country, often you never know what you're going to see on the bikes. We've got a few pictures there, just some things from daily life. The guy on the right, on the left, left, the guy on the left, he's got a pane of glass on the back of a bike. I don't know how you can transport a pane of glass on the back of a motorbike without it breaking, but they do. You'll see there's a bike in the top right with a coffin on the back of it. I don't know if someone was in the coffin or if it was empty, but there was a coffin on the back of a bike. And in the bottom right, you can see a guy has pretty much everything on the bike. I don't know how he does it. It's also a country you'll often see whole families on bikes. They've got 6 people on that bike. I've got a motorbike. I think I've only been able to take my two of my kids on the bike, so I'm not quite up to Cambodian standards yet. It's also a country, though, that is very poor. It's one of the poorest countries in the world. I think the average, the daily income is just about $2 a day, daily income. So incredibly poor country. But it has extreme wealth in the country as well. It has some incredibly poor people, but also some incredibly rich people. I've seen more luxury cars in Cambodia than I have in New Zealand. I've seen Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Rolls Royces and Porsches and Bentleys in the streets of Cambodia, much more than I have seen here in New Zealand or in Australia or anywhere I've been. It's an odd country in that sort of way. And it's important to know a little bit about the history in order to know why it's like that. So I thought I'd share just very briefly about a little bit about the history of Cambodia, because that's the reason partly why we are there and why it's important that we're there and what the work is that we're doing there with the Cambodian people. One of Cambodia's countries, neighbours, I don't know if you know where it is in the world, one of its neighbours is Vietnam. And during the Vietnam War, of course, it was a very extreme time in that part of the world. But the conflict, it crept over into Cambodia. And a lot of times, Cambodia was accused of harboring Vietnamese people, the Vietnam forces over there. And so America decided to bomb Cambodia quite heavily at the time. As a picture of Richard Nixon pointing out places in Cambodia which were seen of a threat. And they dropped more bombs on Cambodia than they did in the whole of World War II combined. So Cambodia was heavily, heavily bombed by America. And also America, due to being at war with Vietnam at the time, involved in the war, they helped to install a puppet government in Cambodia that would be very kind and favorable to American interests. So at the time, there was an American, favorable to American leader in Cambodia. But of course, this didn't seem to go too well for the country. It caused a lot of hostility towards America and a lot of hostility towards foreign involvement in the country. And as a result, a regime arose called the Khmer Rouge. I don't know if you've heard of Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge. It was called the Communist Party of Kampuchea. And they rose up with the aim of getting rid of all this corrupting influence in Cambodia. They wanted Cambodia restored to its glory days, where it was a huge, powerful nation. And so they wanted to get rid of everything that was corrupting it as a people. The way they did this, it was very extreme. They decided to kick everyone out of the cities to start with and to go back to a farming lifestyle, an agrarian-run society. So they literally kicked every single person out of the cities. This is a lot of people. They told them to get out of the cities and go and work on the farms. No one knew how to work on farms, though. They didn't know how to run a farm, how to make a farm work. And so it was a terrible idea. As a result of this, many, many people died. They died of hunger. They died of malnutrition, diseases, all the things associated with that. But also, anyone who was seen as a threat to this ideology was killed. Almost everyone from the city was eventually killed because they were seen as being corrupted by foreign influences. Anyone involved in religion was killed. Anyone involved with education, anyone who was involved in any sphere in society which thought it might have been corrupted was killed. Anyone who wore glasses was killed because you were seen as having a certain status in society. They think at the time there would have been about 6 million Cambodians, and they think about 2 million of them were killed during this time. It was incredibly devastating for them as a country. Can you imagine? That's similar to New Zealand, isn't it? 6 million people there, similar to New Zealand size. 2 million people suddenly gone. And not just killed by outside forces too, it was killed by their own countrymen. It wasn't along religious lines or tribal lines or cultural lines, it was Cambodians killing Cambodians. And it's had a massive effect on the country, obviously. If you want to know more about it, there's a couple of films that were put out. The Killing Fields was done in the early 80s, and then First They Killed My Father was a film that was recently done, and it kind of gives you a feel of what life was like at the time. They're both quite hard watches, though, so just be aware. The effects that had on the country were massive in all areas. Firstly, it affected at a government level. At a government level, the government now that got put in, it's quite corrupt. In the index on corruption throughout the world, it's ranked 156th worst in the world. It's almost one of the bottom countries in the world for how bad they are at corruption. New Zealand's number one. We're fantastic at corruption. No, we're fantastic on the corruption index, but Cambodia is almost at the very bottom. Makes it very hard for so many areas in society when you've got this corruption. It means there's no leadership in the country too. The leadership all got wiped out at this time. Anyone who had knowledge how to do things, all the elderly died. Anyone who could have an influence was wiped out. I think the average age the life expectancy plummeted down to about 19 at the time. If you were born then, you were only expected to live to 19. All the elderly people died. So there's no leadership in all areas. But also it's caused them to be reliant on outside sources to provide for them. It means they're reliant on outside leaders coming in. They're heavily reliant on outside money coming in as well. And it was a time when the world did chip together because they saw what was happening and they gave money to Cambodia. But the trouble is that's not always a good thing. And they didn't have the system set up to deal with that in a good way. And so some people got that money coming in and just took it for themselves. And then the rest of the people didn't see a cent of it. So that's why you've got some people there who are filthy rich. extremely wealthy, and then the vast majority of the country incredibly poor. And that's lasted today. The other big thing that's had a massive impact is it's affected their identity of who they are as a people. When they're thinking about their own countrymen killed each other, what does that say about you as a country? What does that say about you as a Cambodian? It's incredibly hard for them to deal with. They acknowledge themselves that they are less keen to share as they used to be. They're more keen to hold on to what they've got. They acknowledge themselves that they're less welcoming as a people than they used to be. They also think it's a whole nation who are suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. You see this in different ways where people just do not know how to process their emotions. They go from showing no emotions to suddenly flaring up and everything going to custard. There's many, many reports of wives killing husbands, husbands killing wives, just from small arguments. I had a friend who had a tuk-tuk ride one time, and when he got to the destination, he was having a heated discussion on what the fare should be with the tuk-tuk driver. And the tuk-tuk driver got a machete out of the back of the tuk-tuk and chased him down the street. And it's not just a small argument now, it's a life and death situation, all from just a small argument. So it's got this huge effect on who they are as a people. And it's not just the people who are living at the time, it's passed on to the children as well. There's a couple of Bible verses which we heard this morning, which I chose, and I think they're extremely relevant for the country of Cambodia. The first one from Matthew chapter 11, 28 to 30. It says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." See, the Cambodian people, this is the message that they need to be hearing. The predominant religion over there is Buddhism. 97% of the country roughly would identify as Buddhist. It's not a religion that gives much hope. You're trying to grind daily to earn merit, trying to do things in order to maybe have a better afterlife or maybe be different in a different life. There's no hope around it at all. They need to hear the message of Jesus, which is hope, which does enable us to find rest for ourselves. And that leads to the other verse then. Then how then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they've not even heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can anyone preach unless they are sent? So that comes to us as a family. We 4 years ago approached CMS New Zealand to say, how can we serve? And they said, what country would you like to go to? We said, what country would you like us to go to? And they said, well, Cambodia has great need. So as a family, we packed our bags 3.5 years ago and went to Cambodia. I thought I'd just briefly share what's been happening for us over the last 3 years, just so you get an idea of what we've been doing during this time. So we went over there to learn, is it going to go? Click, there we go. So we kind of got involved with Cambodian life there. We've got our three children all kind of got plugged into what it means to live in Cambodia. There we go. With all the ups and downs. You've got your daily life in the tuk-tuk, you've got flooding which happens near your street, but it's also a lovely place to make friends. Our first year there was devoted to language learning and culture learning, so full-time we were devoted to language learning and culture learning. That was our job really for the first year. And that's just in order to be able to communicate with the local people. If you're wanting to talk to them, you want to talk in their heart language, in the language that is important for them, which they are going to understand more. So one thing with CMS is they love you to learn the language, and thankfully we were given a year to do that. We haven't finished. Language learning is a lifelong thing. I'm still learning English, so learning Khmer is going to be a very long thing my whole life. So we did language learning, and we got integrated into the local church. With CMS, our role there is to get plugged into the Anglican Church in Cambodia and then to serve in whatever way we can over there. So this picture at the moment, this is of the local congregation, the Khmer congregation. Very similar to what we kind of do here, isn't it? It looks very similar. It's in the capital city. They've got some resources, so it's a very similar church service. They've also got an expat service as well. probably getting around, before COVID, maybe 150 people, 200 people weekly, which is wonderful from many different backgrounds. It's an Anglican church, but I think they thought maybe 10% of the people there would have been Anglican. They've got a nice baptismal pool out the front of church too, so people as they walk by can see baptisms happening and hopefully wonder what's going on. Unfortunately, though, after 1 year in the country, COVID hit. So the start of 2020, COVID started to come into Cambodia, and the government reacted quite in an extreme way. They decided to lock the whole country down. So that meant you couldn't go out at all. The army was patrolling the streets a lot of the time. The schools were closed. The shops were closed. The churches were closed for almost 2 years. I always thought the funny thing, though, was that the malls didn't close. The malls were allowed to stay open. You weren't allowed to go to all these other things, but you were allowed to go to the mall. Normally, Southeast Asian cities are quite bustling at night, but with these, the streets were empty. It was a very odd situation for Cambodia to be in. The malls were often very funny. Often we found that rules were put in place just for the sake of having rules rather than thought about what's it actually doing. The picture on the top left, you had to go into the mall, and if you wanted any food, you'd talk to a person sitting at a desk. They would then go off to the restaurant, make the food, and bring it back to you after a while. So it's a very odd situation. And you probably can't see too well, but the bottom right picture, at the tables in the mall, they had a tiny plastic screen about that big, and you'd sit there, and that would protect you from the person who you came to the mall with and the person that you're leaving the mall with. It was a very almost comical situation. But we found it very true for Cambodia that often the government would do things for appearance sake, to look like they're doing something rather than actually thinking about what's it actually going to do. But it made for very odd times living there. The main markets closed down, the outdoor markets where people would sell things, so people just had to go to the street, find wherever they could find a space to sell whatever they could. So you'd have people selling meat and vegetables on the side of the road or out of the back of a motorbike or wherever they could find things. As a result, a lot of shops closed down and a lot of people who used to live in the cities then left to go to live in the country with their families. So the city of Phnom Penh got very odd at this time. Not many people were around. Not much was happening. Everyone was in an isolated sort of situation. The army were keeping things safe. They had their standard issue bamboo sticks, which they could whack people with if you were getting out of line. The governor of Phnom Penh said it was like a parent disciplining their wayward children. So the police would have their batons, which they could then smack people with if they were out of order. And schooling for us had to be online. So our three children did online schooling, which they did fantastically with. I'm always so thankful how well our kids did with this. They had 2 years almost of school online, which is incredibly hard. You'll probably know a bit about what it's like to have Zoom meetings and even church online. But for the kids, 2 years of learning online, difficult, but they coped so, so well. Emily, she was, I think, she would have been almost five when they started doing this. So this is her first encounter with school almost, and it's online. So very, very difficult. But again, we're incredibly thankful for how well they did. They had their Zoom meetings, trying to learn how to read and write and how to do maths over the internet, which is very odd. Church, there were times, there were small patches when you were allowed to do things. So there were small patches when we were allowed to go back to church, and it was very similar to what it looks like here, isn't it? People having to sit a bit apart, masks on. Well, the services were only allowed to be 30 minutes long, though. We had all these restrictions, 30 minutes long, and the sermon was only allowed to be 7 minutes long. So some people loved it, and some people found it very difficult. How would you find it, Graham?
7 minutes.
7 minutes.
Nowhere near long enough.
But that's what we had to do. We were only allowed to do that by the government. So the Khmer service was restricted in that way as well, as the expat service. We had youth group going for a little bit. I was involved with the youth group there. But again, it was under a lot of restrictions. And then after a while, we went to church on Zoom only. And you guys, I'm pretty sure most churches around New Zealand have done that at some stage. And you'll know how it's nice to have something, but it's far from ideal, isn't it? Other ministry areas I was involved with was in a English conversational group where it was offered by the church to people to come in and learn English conversational skills. So a lot of these people here are non-Christians, in the conversational stuff that we were doing, we had a Christian bent on it as well. There was a conversational guided in a Christian philosophy. And so it was wonderful just having Christian conversations with these people as they're learning English. The good thing too is that the relationships I've formed there are still in place now. I still chat with these guys while we're in New Zealand. Unfortunately, it went back to Zoom, and so less than ideal for learning a language, but it was what we could do. And I do look forward to going back and seeing these guys again. I also did a program called Celebrate Recovery. It's in New Zealand. It's in the North Island. It's not very big, though. It's got a similar philosophy to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's designed to help people with hurts, habits, and hang-ups, is the tagline that goes with it. And the reality is that there's a lot of people in the country, not just Khmer people, but a lot of people from overseas who have got deep hurts within them. They're either fleeing something in their own country, leaving relationships, leaving issues in their own country, coming to a new country, hoping to get away from it. But they're carrying a lot of hurts and a lot of things that stick with them. So one of my roles is going to be learning, running one of these programs when I go back.